Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We'll begin this evening with a public hearing for Ordinance A-24. Do we have anybody who would like to speak here at our public hearing?
If you want, I can give a summary. I know Mr. Wheeler. Council's heard it a time or two, but just in case anyone, I know the chief might want to hear about it. So, Ordinance A-24 just adds tattoos and body piercing shops as a conditional use in the downtown area, which is the Central Business Development District. Historically, tattoo and body shop piercing shops have been conditional uses, but they were removed as part of our revision of the zoning code in 2020. It has become an issue for Genesis Beauty Salon since they utilize microblading, which is a semi-permanent eyebrows for customers that the county health department actually regulates under a tattoo. So the whole idea behind the amendment to that is to add it is specifically for the microblading process. Just for folks that aren't familiar with the conditional use process, that comes before the Planning Commission, and the Planning Commission has every right to reject the conditional uses, and it is not a automatically given allowance. So it does bring it back before the Planning Commission for their review and subsequent denial or approval.
So Mr. Wheeler moves that the chief have microblading performed. Is it anyone else want to speak to this during our public hearing? Very good. All right. With no additional comments, we will close the public hearing. And now we'll begin our regular meeting for Orrville City Council. We'll begin this evening with Pastor Gary D. Hart from Independent Missionary Baptist Church.
Good evening. Let us pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we come this evening, Lord, thanking you for another day and another opportunity. Father God, as the council begins this meeting, we invite you into this place, into our hearts, into our minds. We ask that you would lead and guide them and direct them in every decision that they make that comes before them, and that they keep you in mind when making those decisions for the betterment of this city. Father God, we are so thankful that we still have a city that believes in prayer. Let us be a light, a beacon to others, that they may follow in that example and not take you out of a place where you're so much needed. We give you all praise, honor, and glory. In the mighty name of Jesus, let us all say amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks, Reverend DeHart. The clerk, could please call the roll.
Handwork.
Here.
Asparis.
Here.
Wax.
Here.
Davies.
Here.
Carr.
Here.
Shanklin.
Here.
Squirrel.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Council should have received a copy of the meeting minutes from the April 1st regular meeting of Orrville City Council. We have a motion to approve the minutes. Carr moves. And Shanklin seconds.
Asparis.
Yes.
Wax.
Yes.
Davies.
Yes.
Carr.
Yes.
Shanklin.
Yes.
Squirrel.
Yes.
Handwork.
Yes.
All eyes motion passes.
Thank you. There's no public comment on our agenda for this evening, so we'll move on to our standing committee reports. We'll begin with our Finance Committee. Mr. Lax, good evening.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Finance Committee has not met before I have been reported.
Thank you. Our Health and Safety Committee, Mr. Spiros.
Thank you, Mr. President. Health and Safety has not met. I have a report.
All right. Thank you, sir. Our Parks and Recreation Committee, Mr. Handwork.
Mr. President, Parks and Rec met this evening and we discussed the depot project as well as donations and accepting grant money. Yep.
Thank you very much. Our Planning Committee, Ms. Carr.
The Planning Committee has not met. We do plan on meeting on Monday, the 22nd, immediately after the Utility Board meets.
It'll be here in this room?
Yes.
Pardon me, Mr. President. Can I ask what the topic is for that?
Yes, we need a topic for the meeting.
Oh, sorry. Discussing the township. Is that it?
possible formation of a township?
Yeah, thank you. My brain just went totally out there.
Yeah, that's all right. I'm glad it happens to somebody else instead of me. Always happy to be. Okay. Ordinance of Personnel Committee, Ms. Squirrel.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ordinance of Personnel has not met. I have no report.
Thank you. Our Transportation Committee, Mr. Shanklin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Transportation Committee has not met, therefore I have no report.
Thank you. Our Utilities Committee, Mr. Davies.
Thank you, Mr. President. Utilities has not met, so I have no report.
Thank you. We have no special committee reports, so we'll move on to administrative reports, and we'll begin with Mayor Plavin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. I just have one item. Our employee of the month for April 2024 is Jeff Morrison from the Orville Fire Department, and he was nominated by Fire Chief Chris Bishop. Jeff was a 2023 Firefighter of the Year and is a two-time winner of that award. He also was the Orville Citizen of the Year Award in 2007. Jeff is a 50-year veteran of the fire department, and he is very active within the department, at least working a day or two a week. Over the years, he's been involved in lots of different things. One, he organized a food drive that would help over 200 families during the holiday to get a meal. He also helps out at the July 4th celebration, and you will see him and his crew at fields 1, 2, and 3, keeping that maintained during the 4th of July. Jeff does have hobbies, including traveling to car shows, and he actually owns his grandmother's car and is able to display that. And he also works at his last detail shop. He enjoys spending time with his wife Linda, especially attending his grandchildren's sporting events. And Jeff Morrison is a shining example of service and commitment, and it is evident that his contributions have made Orville a better place. And that concludes my report.
All right, thank you, Mayor Plavin. Move on to our Safety Service Director, Mr. Wheeler.
Thank you, Mr. President. Chief Seiler has assigned two new detectives in the department, Corey Shane and Ryan Mace, so congratulations to them on that well-deserved role. Also, I want to remind everyone the Compost Center is open every Wednesday and Saturday. Wednesday, 7:30 a.m. to 11:15 a.m., and then 12:15 p.m. to 3:15 p.m., and Saturdays from 8 to noon. We do accept leaves, grass, branches, shrub trimmings, and trees, no stumps or roots. And as President Vance had mentioned in the past, we do have some leaf mulch and wood chips available as well. According to Ryan Emmer, our service superintendent, it is very good quality this year as well. So, but we do not load. That is all that manual labor is on that person's responsibility. And that's my report for tonight.
All right, thank you. Our Utilities Director, Mr. Prediger.
Thank you, Mr. President. One update there. The high winds that we had over the weekend had pretty minimal impacts on us. We did have some outages Friday night in the Kidron and the Dalton area, and again on some carryover early this morning in the Kidron area. But pretty fortunate. Most we had out at any one time was about 100 customers and about 2 hours. So pretty reflective of our tree trimming program that we have, and the fact that our guys are pretty close by. Our response time's pretty quick too. So other than that, I do have a report to present to this body tonight, so I'll save my comments till then. Thank you.
Very good. Finance Director, Ms. Strimlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Council should have received the fund balance report for the period ending February 29th. 2024, and I would just ask for a motion to approve that subject to audit.
Lax moves.
Second.
Shanklin seconds.
Lax.
Yes.
Davies.
Yes.
Carr.
Yes.
Shanklin.
Yes.
Squirrel.
Yes.
Hamburg.
Yes.
Ms. Ferris.
Yes.
All eyes, motion passes.
Thank you. Our law director, Mrs. Kirkbride, was not able to join us this evening, and I have no report. So we can move on our agenda to old business.
Ordinance A24. I move that this ordinance be placed on third reading.
Second.
Second, Mr. Hamburg.
Davies.
Yes.
Carr.
Yes.
Shanklin.
Yes.
Squirrel.
Yes.
Hamburg.
Yes.
Asparis.
Yes.
Lax.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Ordinance A-24, an ordinance amending Chapter 1104, Use Table of the Zoning Code of the City of Porterville, Ohio.
Any questions or discussion?
I would hope council is now an expert on microblading, so I'll be glad to answer any additional questions, but we have, hopefully everyone's understands the goal of the ordinance change.
Okay, very good. All right, hearing no discussion, are you ready to vote?
I move that ordinance A-24 be adopted today.
Second, Mr. Lax.
Carr.
Yes.
Shanklin.
Yes.
Squirrel.
Yes.
Hamburg.
Yes.
Asparis.
Yes.
Lax.
Yes.
Davies.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Move on now to new business.
Ordinance B-24. I move that this ordinance be placed on first reading.
Second, Mr. Shanklin.
Shanklin.
Yes.
Squirrel.
Yes.
Hamburg.
Yes.
Asparis.
Yes.
Lax.
Yes.
Davies.
Yes.
Carr.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Ordinance B-24, an ordinance approving the editing and inclusion of certain ordinances as part of the various component codes of the codified ordinances of Orville, Ohio, and declaring an emergency.
Something we do every year.
Thank you, Mr. President. Every year we receive notification from our company that publishes our codified ordinances of the a list of the changes that are going to be made, whether those are changes that the city has made through different ordinances or resolutions, or changes made at the state level that are required to be incorporated within our current codified ordinances. This is that part of that annual ordinance. They did notify us that there is 58 sections amended, and they are all related to state law changes. There is a list as part of the ordinance. There really isn't any choice on this, so I do recommend approval on first reading if possible. And they will make the changes, obviously, to the books, but also online as well.
We used to receive a giant book every year of all of these changes, and so thankfully we were spared that now.
I have those if you would like those.
The clerk's office has one for your reference. So.
I move that the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of an ordinance on three separate days be suspended.
Second,
Mr. Lyons.
Squirrel.
Yes.
Hamburg.
Yes.
Asparis.
Yes.
Lax.
Yes.
Davies.
Yes.
Carr.
Yes.
Shanklin.
Yes.
Motion passes.
I move that ordinance B-24 be adopted as read.
Second, Carr.
Hamburg.
Yes.
Asparis.
Yes.
Lax.
Yes.
Davies.
Yes.
Carr.
Yes.
Shanklin.
Yes.
Squirrel.
Yes.
Motion passes.
All right, and now up to the moment we've all been waiting for, our annual report.
The grand finale of annual report.
That's right.
Oh, that's right. Well, the peak of finding of that annual yes. reports then.
It's the peak of annual report season tonight.
You can't talk money.
Back. I know what you tried to do. It didn't work.
Do it.
I know what you tried to do.
We can skip it.
Oh, look out there.
Oh,
I'm going to take your eyes out there. I get whacked by a solar eclipse. Thank you very much. Yeah.
I knew exactly where you were going.
Yeah, just keep this room going here, so probably don't do much.
That's what I mean, that part never came, hasn't come up yet.
Looks good.
Hey, Paul, your camera okay?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, good set. I mean, as long as it's not showing this way, as long as it's going that way, so. All set? All righty. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jeff Redinger. I'm your utility director. So a lot of these slides that we'll be looking at are things that we have seen in the past, but a lot of folks seem to ask us the same questions year to year, especially since we have a few new people on City Council. I kind of use this a little bit as an education process. I just wanted to remind the group that the utilities are overseen by a five-member board. These are our current board members. We meet opposite the City Council on the even on Mondays every evening. The board hires the utility director. The board acts kind of as a separate entity outside of the City Council sort of umbrella, kind of keeps the politics a little bit at arm's length, and this has been the way things have been since the charter's been in place, and helps the utilities function a little bit more like a business. We could kind of move through the process a little bit quicker sometimes. Just a few highlights from last year. Our budget stays pretty much the same. It kind of fluctuates a little bit sometimes with some capital projects, but these expenditures for all three utilities are fairly typical. We've had the same rate structure on the electric side in place since 2016. That's been subsidized quite a bit, and a lot of that subsidization comes from the sales of our wholesale energy, and we'll talk a little bit about that, but that helps stave against inflation, and certainly the more important part, it keeps our rates down for our customers. Our revenues were down a little bit from last year, mainly due to the fact that we didn't sell as much into that wholesale market, and the winter and summer last year were a little bit mild. We did, as part of our transmission line project, to bring a second transmission connection in from the grid. Two of the three transformers that we ordered about a year and a half ago arrived. We've got purchase orders in for $6 million worth of transformers, and like I said, two of those showed up. We did increase our ownership share of our Fremont natural gas plant. We'll talk a little bit more about that a little bit later on. That plant continues, that whole project continues to deliver great value to us. All utilities had some pretty good investments from the capital side. We'll look at some of those projects a little bit later on. And as I mentioned also, that all of our utilities met all of our federal and state environmental permits. Our more formal utility report will be posted on our website. It goes into a lot more details on what goes on behind the utilities, put some faces behind our superintendents, and highlights a little bit more some of the projects. So that report will be on our website, and I'll only refer to an overview of some financials a little bit later on in this report. Our water and wastewater facilities, this is a common slide there, but give you a sense, our water utility has been around since 1894. All of our water comes from underground wells. We have about 61 miles of underground lines that we have to maintain. We've got 10 employees that work out of that department. Our wastewater facility has been around since 1908. The plant that is down at the facility on North Main Street was first built in 1951, and we've undergone a number of renovations to that over the years. We have about 42 miles of lines underneath the ground.
Infrastructure on both of these utilities are going to be something that we will be dealing with over the next 10-year period, as some of those lines have been underground for 60, 70 some odd years. We'll be talking a little bit more about that. Both of these facilities process anywhere from between 1.5 million to 2 million gallons of either treated water or processed effluent or sewage water every year. So a lot of stuff is going on a day-to-day basis. And because our wastewater utility also treats a lot of our industrial waste, and because of our large industrial base here, we actually have a facility up the road that can serve a community with a population of 35,000. But because of our industrial load, we have to have a lot of capacity at the plant. So a lot going on up there, and again, we do that with about 10 people in place. The wastewater utility is in the process of reviewing its 5-year operating permit with Ohio EPA. This slide just gives you a rough idea that doesn't really change much from year to year, but gives you a sense for where the revenues and the usage comes from our residential and our industrial customers. In the Strimlin's report here, next meeting, she'll go into the weeds a little bit more on this, but this will just give you a little bit of sense for where the revenues are, the size of the customers, and the impacts that those various customers have on our revenues and cost. Our top customers really doesn't change very much from year to year. The big folks out there are J.M. Smucker Company and Smith Dairy, and followed by some of our other larger industries, and everybody else is barely on the radar relative to Smucker's and Smith Dairy. But this is pretty typical from year to year. At the end of the day, everybody wants to know where our rates are stacked up against there. The bars in the blue are where the state average is at, and our red bars are where our current rates are. These are 2002 rates that the state has, and I did make a little bit of adjustment for them to try to get things on an apples-to-apples basis. Again, these are averages. Your at-home usage may be a little bit more or less, but we're right in par with the state average. One of the reasons why our water is a little bit higher than state average, not by much, but a number of years ago, when the power plant went through some changes with respect to operational goes, prior to 2016, the electric plant was the water plant's largest customer. The electric utility was 30% of its revenues, and we were subsidizing that utility for quite a while, so we had to make some adjustments in that as the plant's operation and subsequent usage went down. So our rates needed to go through a pretty significant adjustment period over 5 years, and now we're pretty stabilized. Some of the major projects, and I just listed a few of them here, the rest are in our annual report, are shown here. Lead and copper is big with respect to Ohio and U.S. EPA, as well as also plastics. You've been hearing a lot of that on television, but we go through pretty extensive testing. We don't have a lot of lead services left in the city anymore, only a couple dozen. They will be addressed here, and those are all on the customer side. All of our testing that we do on an annual basis has resulted in levels below detectable limits. Moving to the generation plant, as well know, the electric utility has been around. It's the newest utility, born in 1917. So we've been generating electricity since then. As you recall, and I mentioned previously, we had some EPA conversations or changes in our permit about 5 years or so ago that greatly limited the operation of that facility and took us out of the day-to-day generation of business. We shifted a lot of our efforts to some projects that we'll talk about a little bit later on, and put us out in the wholesale market a little longer than we would like to be, but we have some plans to deal with that. We have about 20 employees at work at the power plant. Also, part of our electric side is we also own all of our distribution lines. So we have 13 people in our electric distribution department that maintains all of those lines. We have about 250 pole miles of lines. We serve about the eastern half of Wayne County. We do have some customers in western Stark County. Our diesel generator sites, we haven't talked about these before in the past, but these are located up at the city's wastewater treatment facilities. We bought these generators off of our state joint action agency, AMP, in 2021. At that time, they were 20 years old. We paid a little bit over $800,000 for them, and last year we were in the black on those. So in less, a little bit over 2 years, we have paid those units off, mainly in the credits that they generate during peak times that are the people that operate the grid credit us back, and we'll talk about those a little bit more. But it is was a smart move that the utility board made a few years or so ago. These units can black start our plant. That's what that means is if the grid goes down and we are totally in the black and the plant is not running, we can basically jump start the power plant and given 8 to 10 hours later on, we can light up all of our customers if the grid goes down. They also help us out during peaking periods during that, but even with all of our operation and maintenance costs, all the fuel cost in here, these units are now in the black. They make money for us, or have been making money for us since January of last year. Related, there's a lot of talk, and there will always be talk about climate change and the impacts related to that, but carbon dioxide emissions are a big part of that climate discussion, and you can kind of see since 2010 what our emissions have looked like. Again, that big drop in 2017 is when US EPA put 10% operating restrictions on us, but still in all, you know, we're kind of doing our part, maybe not so totally voluntarily. This just gives you a sense on how we have evolved over the years. I show this chart every year, and it doesn't change that much. But prior to 2013, all of our energy was generated by the power plant. In the mid to late 2000 time period, we started looking long, realizing that we had a lot of challenges ahead of us with, from an environmental perspective, age of the plant and things along that line. We started making investments in some other jointly owned generation projects, a gas-fired plant up in Fremont, Ohio, a state-of-the-art coal-fired plant out in Illinois, and we have four hydro plants that are along the Ohio River, and we put in a couple of solar sites. So you kind of see how our diversity has changed over the years. Last year, the power plant only generated about 3% of our electricity. That is the least amount of energy that we have ever generated in all the records I have going back more than 70 years. Just the place that we're at. This chart kind of gives us an idea where our, who our customers are on the electric side, a little bit different group of people compared to water and wastewater, where most of those customers are inside city limits. About 40% of our customers, electric customers, are outside city limits. 88% of those customers are all residential customers, but they only account for about 25% of all of our sales. Another roughly quarter of that pie is our commercial customers. And the other half of our sales come from just 20 customers. And two customers make up half of that 50%. And that's Quality Castings and the J.M. Smucker Company. So of our roughly 7,200 customers, about 25% of that sales is with two folks here in town. that really doesn't change very too much year to year. These are those customers kind of lined up from big to small. Again, you can kind of see the larger players in there. But our industrial customers, even though the bars are small, there's a lot of usage there. Like I said, only 20 of them, but they do make up 50% of all of our sales. I mentioned some of the costs we have to pay now that we're not generating that much. We rely on the energy coming from our projects that we saw earlier, and we'll talk a little bit more later on. But in addition to the energy we receive on that, we have to pay the folks that operate and own the grid, basically the rights or the tolls to move that energy from wherever those facilities are located at to the city. Kind of like driving on the turnpike. You want to head across I-90 or 80 from east to west, you're going to be buzzing through 20 some odd toll gates and paying 15, 20 bucks from start to finish. Our fees that we pay to bring that energy in over the course of any year is in the neighborhood of $9 million. We don't have any control over those costs. Those costs are direct pass-throughs to our customers. Now, the good news is about that is because we can still generate as much energy as we can through the power plant and those emergency diesels, if we're operating those facilities during the peak times, that the grid sees throughout the year, and that's January through December 31st. If we are operating and we are not bringing in energy during those peak periods, the transmission owners and operators give us some credit. And those credits last year amounted to about $8.5 million. So those credits mostly offset that $9.2 million that normally would have went to our customers. And if we weren't in that position there, those certainly would be making a significant impact on what our electric rates will be. This chart just gives you a little bit of history of where those fees, which are in the red, and where those credits have been over roughly the past 15 some odd years. You can see they weren't too much in the beginning. By too much, I mean they were only $6 million in 2015. But you can see we've been able to offset a lot. So even though the power plant is not generating electricity and saving our customers some additional money that way, its main job these days is to be in position to offset those high peaks so we can maximize these credits that we receive by the owners of the companies that own the large transmission wires that bring the energy from our projects into our community. I want to skip by this one here. A couple of our electric projects that we have done recently, probably one of the more significant is, as part of our transmission project and a lot of the restrictions and obligations of being connected to the grid, we sold off our interconnection line, our transmission line between the power plant and AEP. It's about an $8.5 million line. That keeps us out of a lot of obligations and really lowers our risk exposure to that. So going forward, we will be saving money. We won't have to maintain that line going forward. And probably one of the bigger benefits of that is when we bring the second line in, which will be coming from the east, we will avoid having to pay those costs, which will be in the neighborhood of $15 to $18 million. We'll be spending about $10 million in other internal upgrades, new substations that will come out of that. But because we will not actually own the wires that are connected to the grid, it relieves us from a lot of financial and some other obligations there that would be very onerous to us. These are some of the, I mentioned some of the issues that we had just a couple days ago over the weekend with wind related there, but every year we compile some statistics on what causes us outages. These are the averages in our region of all the utilities. Their top issues are residential issues, storms, equipment, trees, squirrels. Top of our list is squirrels. Squirrels is always at the top of our list. We spend a lot of money trimming trees to kind of mitigate those problems, but we haven't come up with a way to keep the squirrels out yet. We do have a lot of protective equipment out there, but squirrels and trees and birds and lightning, all these things that we have no control over, are some of our top five issues that we have. But even with all of that said, we did receive a reliability award from our national association. They compare us on the same scale as the investor-owned utilities in our region. Our major restoration time during a major outage event is only about an hour and a half. If it's a non-major event, that was just slightly under 60 minutes, and that's the time that we get to call. Our guys come in from wherever they live, get out in the trucks, get out to the job, do the job, and come back. We have our jobs done before AEP and First Energy even get out to their jobs. We had a car pull accident over the weekend, and it took Ohio Edison 6 hours to respond to that. We had some wires that were connected to that pole, and we had to wait 6 hours for those guys to get that. We would have had that done in an hour and a half, somewhere in that neighborhood. So we were recognized for our reliability during that. And if you do that math, even though we have these intermittent outages, it's the time that we're always supplying energy, and our availability rate was 99.98%. So, and that's, we're no stranger to those numbers. That is one of the things that that we do, and these guys understand a lot. The projects haven't changed over the years. They've come online starting in 2012. I just show three of our hydro projects. These are along the Ohio River. They were part of a $3.5 billion project that 43 other communities jointly own. We have about roughly 15% of our energy coming from these hydro plants over the course of the year. We're also a partial owner of one of the last state-of-the-art coal-fired plants that was constructed in Illinois. AMP, our state association, and seven other associations own this 1,800 megawatt facility, which is a gazillion times bigger than what we have up the street. Very solid project for us, but we don't get a lot of energy from it. Our Fremont facility is a natural gas fired plant facility up in Fremont, Ohio, that we purchased partially constructed from another utility about 12 years or so ago. And our solar sites, and we'll talk about those in a little bit, we do have two solar sites. One's up behind the wastewater treatment plant off of Main Street, and the other's in our technology industrial park where Smith Dairy is located. So if you went out for the solar eclipse just last week, this is what our largest solar site was doing. This is our the largest of the two. So this was Sunday afternoon. I can see this is at nighttime, not too much sunshine, not too much output from the solar field, but from around noon, you can kind of see what that capacity was. The sun came up, went down. Here's the impact of the solar eclipse. So at roughly, when was that, 3:15 or so, when we finally went there, output pretty much dropped down to next to nothing. Moon moved away, sun came out, the solar site came back up and was producing where it was producing that late in the afternoon. Well, the curve next to it, I just pulled a snapshot and not in time. That only took us through roughly noon there. But you can see that that does have a real impact. That is something that we have to take into account with solar. So things people have to take into account if they have any kind of solar, the fact that they're not, sun's not shining most of the time to begin with. But you have an event like this happen, even though that doesn't happen anymore, that could have just as easily been a cloud. It comes in there and have that impact. So we have to account for all of that. I'm going to skip by this here. This chart just kind of stacks up our various projects and how they met the load. And it just says where all the generation came from each month. These are more kind of in the weed slides that we show our utility board. But this gives us a sense on where all the energy came from and how much that energy cost at any given point of time. when I tell you that these units operate the way they do in the case of our hydro projects, these hydro plants are along the Ohio River. We don't control the rainfall. We don't control the flow of the river. Dependent on the water conditions and the water levels in there, those power plants produce energy at wherever the river level is at. So you can kind of see over the course of the year, they'll 100% would be operating at their full capability 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. You see that none of them operate that way. There may be some days or some hours when there's peak conditions, but over the course of any given month, roughly they'll produce energy at maybe about half of their capability. The river level is controlled by the Army Corps of Engineers. They're more interested in navigation of river commerce, and flood control. What goes on in the hydro plants, they really don't care too much about, but we do work, we being the operators that work on behalf of us and of the other members, help kind of manage that and maximize the water flow in there. Our Prairie State plant, that's a coal-fired plant. That's a plant that runs almost all the time, almost like a nuclear plant runs. It's not subject to weather conditions or fuel availability, things along that line. It runs pretty much at its rated capacity all the time, except here in September it had a scheduled maintenance work that was going on. Our solar sites, you can kind of see what they do over the course of the year. Not a whole lot of sunshine in January. That doesn't come as any great surprise if you lived in northeastern Ohio for as long as you have. Their peak output is during the summer months, so that's when they operate the most. That's when the energy has more value to us. Those are some of the things that we kind of jiggle around a little bit to try to manage when that energy is going to come versus when we need it. This is just another chart that just kind of shows where the energy comes from. The line up above is what our customers' load is. Do we have everything covered? No, we don't. This red hash mark is we are out in the market on a day-to-day basis, filling in whatever those incremental needs are. But just kind of gives you a sense on of all the energy we have, how much of it is pretty can we count on, and how much of those prices do we kind of have pinned down? They're not just subject to the whims of the market in there. So it helps. Helps us in some long-term planning, helps us in our ability to keep our rates stable. This is where the electric rates stack up at the end of the day. That's what those guys do down there. You can kind of see where Orville utility rates, relative to AEP and First Energy, and they are two competing utilities in our region. AEPs to the south of us and west, and First Energy is to the east and the north of us. Hardly any comparison. That is about a 35-40% difference in rates. That combined with our water and wastewater rates on a monthly basis, our typical residential customer pays about $150 a month for utilities. And if you check that against a lot of places out there, that's pretty darn good. This is kind of gives an idea where the energy markets go. The energy market works almost like the stock market. Our prices for electricity, if we're buying because we're not generating enough, or our projects aren't generating enough, or customer demand is great, it trades on the market in 5-minute increments. So every 5 minutes, the price of electric changes. And this is these are the average wholesale rates of electricity over the past roughly 25 years. You can kind of see back in the early 2000s, they were going, they weren't going in very good places. This is the time that the board started looking at, holy smokes, where are these prices going to go? We have an older plant that we know is not going to be around for another 50 or 60 years. If we don't have other generation, which would make no economic sense for us to build something like we have today, tomorrow. We started looking at joint ownership and some economies of scale building these larger plants. So when the ideas of the hydro plant and Prairie State plant and Fremont projects came around there, it was done out of response to these increases in the wholesale market that our customers would have been exposed to. Then we had this little thing called a recession that took place in 2008, 2009, and just knocked the wind out of the sails. Also in this same time frame was when all this natural gas, this Marcellus shale, all this shale gas was being discovered in Pennsylvania and West Virginia. And that helped lower down the gas prices. And gas prices and electricity prices are coupled together. They're joined at the hip. Gas prices go up, electric prices go up, because most of the electric generation out there these days is gas generated. This is where the United States, I'm just about ready to wrap up here. This is where the United States has evolved to over the past roughly 20 years. I kind of say for a long time it was coal, and even before that coal was even larger. Now it's a smaller percentage. You can kind of see the growth of wind and solar and some other renewables. Nuclear has always stayed right around the same and will probably be in that general category. But as the coal shrinks, that is being made up mainly by natural gas. Today, this is what the United States makeup looks like, a little bit more in gas, less coal. The nuclear stuff has stayed about the same, but there are some inroads made in those renewables. But like I said, those renewables come with a few more strings attached to them. The wind isn't blowing, the sun isn't shining, and the rain isn't falling in the right time frames. You can have all these facilities out there; they do nothing when the sun goes down, or the wind's not blowing. But they are all part of the mix. They all have good points and bad points about them. They all have vulnerabilities and risk associated with them there. And our industry is all about trying to spread those out there. We don't want to put all of our eggs in one basket, kind of like your investments are. Our financials, it's a quick snapshot. Ms. Dremel will have a lot more in a couple weeks. But all of our utilities have been debt-free for a long time. We have some outstanding interest-free notes still left in the water department. We are financially in good shape. Our utilities are well-run, and we have the rates to back those up with. These are some of the capital projects that we have going on at all three utilities. These are all in the packages that you have here. And also in the slideshow that was sent out with the city council packages are all my notes in here. So a lot of these other interesting or maybe uninteresting facts that we've been talking about here, those are also all included in my notes here. So I won't dwell a lot on these, but like the city, there we're replacing infrastructure, equipment, trying to make sure everything is kept up and we're not behind on anything. Winding things down here from the Economic Development Department, we did have a couple of significant investments made by a couple of our business owners in town. Big investments, not a lot of jobs. That's sometimes they go hand in hand, sometimes they don't. Investment is still a good thing for us, and you can kind of see since I started keeping track of these things a few years or so ago, and there's been a lot of investment. A lot of jobs coming into town, and a lot of towns retained. Wayne County is still a strong economic player out there. Low unemployment rates. The one thing I do want to mention here before I leave this page is we established an economic development office roughly 15, 18 years or so ago. Mike Hedberg has been managing that for us. Mike will be retiring here in another couple months. Kristen Ensley, who was at a committee meeting here, we have massaged her job responsibilities around a little bit. Kristen will be taking over and playing a lot of roles that Mike was doing for the utilities, as well as doing the work that she was doing with Mr. Wheeler from a planning and economic development part. So we've got a nice fit going on there, but I did want to take the opportunity to thank Mike for all of his years of work. A lot of that, what he does and has done over the years, you don't see something that you can put up on the screen every year and say, I did that. Some of these things have been fostered and nurtured over years and years. Some things we're working on today may not be realized so 3 or 4 years down the road there, but he's had his hand in on a lot of those efforts. Works real good with Kristen, a lot of our other economic departments in the state and the county. Going down the road for us, this list doesn't change a whole lot from year to year, but environmental issues are always a challenge for all three of our utilities, especially on the electric side. Mr. Hedberg did give an update to this group about our challenges related to developing another industrial park. We are out of land. We received 106 economic development opportunity or notices last year. We were in position to respond to zero of those, either because we didn't have the property, or some of these projects were just so doggone big, I'm not too sure if the county could have handled some of these in here. But nonetheless, if we want to be in position to attract more growth, allow some of our businesses and industries to expand, that is a place that we are working. Everybody across there, along with the mayor, working real hard to try to open up those opportunities. We're always working for grants. There's no such thing as free money out there. Sounds real good. Read the fine print and all those, but they are difficult to receive, and sometimes it's not worth the free money. But they're hard to get. Some of them are still moving targets, but we do look at that. As I mentioned there, we do have our operating permits coming up for renewal. These things last for 5 years. This renewal process takes anywhere from 6 to 9 months to do. We are doing rate studies for all three utilities. I'm not expecting anything significant to come out of the electric side, other than kind of restructuring things a little bit. Water's in pretty good shape. Sewer, we have a little bit of work to do on that, but stay tuned for that. But like I said, we're not in a real strong financial need, but more for down the road planning some of these other underground infrastructure, these hundreds of miles of lines that we have in here that we need to be coming up with a smart plan on addressing. And with that, I would conclude my report. Ran out of time here pretty good there. The only other thing I wanted to mention here, I did talk with the utility board a couple months or so ago. I am planning on retiring in 24 to about 30 months from now. So I gave the board a heads up. I came out of the closet last Friday with our staff and let them know what our plans are. We will be looking at posting an assistant utility director position here in the relatively near future. Our plan is to bring this individual in well ahead of the game, so we can have a nice transition there. So I'll just leave my presentation with that. Happy to answer any questions. Like I said, there's a lot of other information that's contained in the notes. You see anything on there that have any questions on, ask me. This entire presentation will also be on our on the utilities website. So with that, that's all I have.
Thank you.
All right, adios.
Magic.
looks like it is. Gene, which one's the
remote?
The remote, the...
The white one?
Yeah. This is probably the best view people have.
No, Steve got us.
Is there an extra charge for that, Steve? On-site emergency assistance with technical issues?
After hours?
I actually had to go to special training.
Did you? Go to safety service director school for that?
Over here.
That's a lot. All right, Director Berninger, thanks so much for that report. Does anyone have any comments for the good of the order? Hearing none, we'll entertain a motion to adjourn. We have a motion to adjourn by Mr. Davies.
Second.
Second.
Ms. Ferris?
Yes.
Slack?
Yes.
Davies?
Yes.
Carr?
Yes.
Shanklin?
Yes.
Squirrel?
Yes.
Handler?
Yes.
Motion passes.
All right, thank you very much. We will have our next regular meeting of Orville City Council will be, I guess it'll be May 6th. So we've got a good while here before our next meeting. But until then, we are adjourned. Thank you.